855-212-4227. Send the tweets, send the hot takes at Ken Carman, C-A-R-M-A-N. Coming up in a little bit, we'll get back to the Redskins' name, the Washington football team's name, and figure out what other names that are there. I did think, Pierno, let me run a couple by you.
All right.
Warriors? Nah. Red Tails I like. Red Tails might be pretty good there, eh? That's a fun one. That's interesting. Like, NFL names, what makes the NFL fun is, like, you know, anybody can be called the Tigers and anybody can be called the whatevers. Like, there are some interesting names. Like, the Steelers, that's an interesting name. The Browns, that's an interesting name that's named after Paul Brown. A dog's their logo, the whole thing. The football Giants, named after the original New York Giants, the baseball team. I think that's actually fun. The Jets, the whole thing. Like, there's different names that are kind of fun with it. And I think, like, hey, like, don't just make it anything regular. The Red Tails, Washington Red Tails, kind of goes off the right off the tongue there. I think that might be perfect. Caller brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, anything related to, you know, Washington, D.C., you know, maybe like involving the military or, you know, again, what about maybe something like with pigskin or hogs, you know, hogs, since, you know, you could go back to the great era of the Redskin franchise.
That's a great thought, but, you know, if I were looking at this like the Redskins are, like some of their history is, let's be honest, George Preston Marshall, and some of their history is a little ugly, all right, a lot ugly. Probably to a lot of folks. Let's be serious here. But you want to get a name that encompasses not just the entire history of the organization, but also the area. So when it comes to hogs, that was a great era. But by doing that, do I lessen the era of other Redskins football teams? Like the season with Lombardi when they got over 500, and that like is do I. Do I lessen that to a degree? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, if you take one, like, if I were to read, like, okay, my team.
It just,
the Browns,
you know, it was
right?
One specific era in the franchise's history. So why are we single? Yeah, I got
exactly.
You.
Like if we were going to rename the Browns, I can't just go, well, they're the Otto Grahams. Well, no, they were good in the 80s, too. And then, you know, Joe Thomas is, you know, like two others have been.
Yeah, why are we going to
really
single that them out in particular? Yeah.
So I think that that's very tough to do, but hey, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you're coming up with interesting names there.
But yeah, you know, like the Generals, just any other military name.
I wrote down the Generals, but I wrote it down as a joke because the Harlem Globetrotters always beat the Washington Generals. So I don't know if you really can go with the Washington Generals. I mean, they're known as the team that's the jobber to the Harlem Globetrotters throughout my entire life. They're born losers. The Washington Generals are. I don't know if you can name them the Generals. Do you even understand about the Harlem Globetrotters, Pierno?
I went to go see them one time in my life.
Was it fun? Did you have fun?
It was all right.
Did they do that? Did you actually get water in your bucket instead of the confetti? Is that why you were upset?
I don't even remember that part.
You don't remember that? That's a Globetrotter staple. Are you sure you went to see the Globetrotters? You just see some cheap knockoff?
I did. It was in New Jersey. I remember going.
you sure you saw the Harlem Globetrotters? You know, they go across the country.
Yeah, it was at the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey.
It doesn't sound right. You saw like the Jersey Overbridgers or something. Like, we only go over the bridge and that's it. And we're from Jersey. Is that what you saw? And they call themselves kind of like, we're kind of like the Globetrotters, we're kind of not. Because if you didn't see the bucket with the water and the confetti, then really you didn't see the Globetrotters.
Got free tickets to go see the Harlem Globetrotters.
Oh, wow. It left a mighty great impression on you, didn't it? Yeah. But, okay, did they play the Generals that night?
Probably. I don't even remember. I guess,
how
all right.
How old were you, Pierno?
I don't know. It was probably, I'm trying to think, maybe it was 6-7 years ago, probably?
That's it? You weren't like a small child? You don't remember any of this?
Oh, no.
Were you loaded?
No. I think I had one or two beers, probably.
Because it's like, how do you not remember any of that?
What's the big deal?
By naming them the Washington Generals?
No, I mean, going to see the Harlem Globetrotters. Like, it was fine.
It's family fun for everybody. Like, people, the Globetrotters were a bit, Meadowlark Lemon, Kurt, like, the whole deal, you don't remember any of that stuff? They were on major television, like Scooby-Doo, man, and the Globetrotters.
Yeah,
the Globetrotters made cameo appearances on Scooby-Doo back in the day.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
It was before my time, too, but I still remember Scooby-Doo and the mystery gang running around with the Globetrotters. I don't know why the Globetrotters were solving ghost stories, but it didn't really need to matter to me. Why was there a dog talking? I didn't need to know that. I don't really. It's a cartoon. I can break those type of realities there. Why in Scooby-Doo Meets the Boo Brothers are Shaggy and Scooby and Scrappy-Doo all afraid of every other ghost except for the ghosts that are helping them catch ghosts? That's the scary thing to me. You need to bone up on this, Pierno, okay? You need to bone up on Scooby. You need to bone up on your Harlem Globetrotters, okay? I mean, I was going to tell you about fireworks. I forget fireworks. Not even worth it now.
I love fireworks.
We'll discuss it maybe at the end of your 2 hours that you're with me. 855-212-4CBS. Sean Devaney going to join us coming up at 11:40. The Big Pad Patriots are back on the radar again, and everybody's looking at the Patriots being the very best in the AFC. I had to make a ranking. Because first off, and I'll cue the music here in a second here, Pierno, because I want to add some fun to this. But yeah, if Cam can stay healthy, of course they're dangerous. Cam's a great, talented quarterback. If he can stay healthy, because he's such a physical specimen, he'll be better off. And I love that Bill did this. I love that Bill Belichick did this because he's better than tanking. When you're a great like Bill Belichick, when you're a great like what the Patriots are supposed to be, when you're a professional football team, greatness is supposed to mean more to those type of people than it means to you and I. You and I, guys like us, we advocate for things like tanking. We're just looking for an excuse to lose. We know we're not going to be good, and I do mean this sincerely with a lot of even NBA teams, there's a reason for it because there's a very small amount of real top talent that you can get there at the top. So you can make an argument for it, even though there's been plenty of teams that have tanked it out in the NBA, and they still suck. And they've been sucking for 20 years. The Kings have sucked up the room for 20 years, and they have tanked it many, many times over. So even then, it's hard for me to make an argument. But I look at tanking, and the way that I see a lot of people in a lot of sports, we're just looking for reasons to suck. We know that our team's not going to be as good as what we hope it's going to be. We know that deep down in our hearts, our teams probably don't have a chance to win a championship, so we justify losing. And we try to make it easier for ourselves. Teams like Belichick, guys like that, teams like the Patriots, a lot of teams in the NFL and a lot of teams in professional sports, they're not going to do that. Last year, when the Pittsburgh Steelers traded for Minkah Fitzpatrick, after week two, when Ben Roethlisberger got hurt, there were writers, and I'm sure Pony will bring this up coming up. I hope he's listening to this, and I hope that he brings this up coming up at 2 o'clock Eastern, because there were people who were advocating tanking for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was a team that was more bunned for 40 years. You want to talk about team history? That team was more bunned for 40 years. They were terrible. Then they became one of the most legendary franchises in professional sports. And I can say that knowing that's true, and I hate their guts as a fan. They became one of the most legendary franchises in professional sports. You think they got that by thinking that it's okay to lose? Like, there's franchises that are okay with that, and they justify that because they're losers, and then there's franchises that will not allow themselves to do it, even if it's not always in their best interest. They went on, they got Minkah Fitzpatrick. The Patriots went out and got Cam Newton. Teams that are trying don't tank it out. They don't. Teams that want to be great because they can be great, because they believe in greatness, because they're actually driven, the teams that are always good year by year by year, those are the ones that have that thought. It's the rest of us that try to justify losing and think that it's going to be okay. And we try to justify the thought of tanking. This is part of the reason why I admire Brian Flores so much down in Miami. You put that team on that field last year and you got 5 wins out of that team. Brian Flores is one of the best coaches in the NFL. I'm convinced of it. There was nobody on that 2019 defense that started a game in 2018 by the time of week 9 that came around. There were 21 UDFA players on that football team halfway through the season. 21 of a 53-man roster and a 46-active-man roster on game day. 21 of those players were undrafted free agents. And he got 5 wins out of that team. And I look at some of the greatest losers in recent NFL history and go, what is Hugh Jackson's excuse? That's what I love about guys like Flores, about guys like Belichick, about guys like Tomlin, about guys like John Harbaugh. In that sport where it's starting to grow, and I have nothing against numbers, I have nothing against intelligence, I have nothing against science. But when we start to look at the analytical point of view, there will be people who maybe are a little bit too smart for their own good. How about that? Because you don't understand, while I crunch numbers, I don't understand the type of toll that takes on a fan base, and then on a locker room, and then on the support staff, and then on a franchise, and all of a sudden, you've been losing now for 5 years, you've been losing now for 10 years, you've lost a generation of fans. Look at Miami. Look at Cleveland. Look at Cincinnati during the 1990s. Look at the Cardinals. You lose generations of people. They become fans of other teams, because who do they go to? They go to other losers. They go to greatness. They go to teams that actually make something work. And we make great stories out of them. We make documentaries out of them. We hold them in higher regard. Bill Belichick isn't some sorcerer. He's not a wizard. Tom Brady has great talent. The teams that they've had have had great talent. Bill Belichick's a damn good football coach. He's bent the rules. Absolutely, he's bent them and broken them. But he's not some wizard who cast a spell over Tom Brady one day. Might have made a pact with the devil. That's between him and the devil. But he didn't cast a weird spell over Tom Brady one day and make Tom Brady an all-time legend. It happened. And he was able to use that to the best of his advantage. And now he can do this with Cam Newton. That's why there's such respect in that sport when it comes to them. But the real question is, if Cam can stay healthy, yeah, they're great. They're dangerous. The real question is, how much is Belichick going to be worth? Because it's still a team where if I'm looking at talent on that football team. Playoffs? Yeah. Anything above it? I'm not sure. So I put together the best teams in the AFC. Go ahead. Go ahead, Pirano. Now, Pirano, I think I'm going to go in ascending order. I put 9 teams down here. At number 9, I put Denver. I'm still skittish on Drew Locke. I like the machismo. I like the head. I like the mind space. I love their football coach. He's an old tooth guy, but he's a guy that you can count on when times are tough. At 61 years old, you know what you're getting in him, and I think he's earned that right. Tennessee, I put at number 8. I need to know how good Mike Vrabel is going to be in year 2 with Ryan Tannehill. The secret's out on Derrick Henry. Are you able to match up and go right after them every single week the way you were able to in 2019? Remember, that was still only a 9-7 football team last year. They did some great things in the playoffs. Mike Vrabel proved to be a really good coach. How good can Vrabel be in year 2? He could go from really good coach to all-time legend in this coming season if he's able to make the same type of things happen with Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. At number 7, I love Sean McDermott so much. They added talent. Josh Allen is still a wild card. And I know you'll hate me in Buffalo, and I know that the folks at Cover One will hate me as well. I'm sorry. When I saw him up close and personal, and I saw him in college up close and personal, and I knew some of his coaches in college, and I knew them up close and personal. And there were times where I saw Josh Allen throw the ball better than anybody I've seen in the last 10, 15 years. I'm dead serious about that. And then there were times that I saw Josh Allen go out there and basically throw the football like a drunk trying to take a leak in the snow. If defenses harbor onto that, you're in trouble. But if he takes this into year 3 and harnesses that potential, then 7th isn't nearly good enough for the Buffalo Bills. This one's going to be a controversial one, and you're going to call me a homer. The only question is their head coach. Excuse me. They have many questions. One of their biggest questions is their head coach. He's a first-year guy. We're in an awkward moment in our history. Will he be able to deal with this type of offseason and lead them to wins? Will their quarterback use last year as a motivation when he was handed to it on a silver platter and he messed things up with his previous head coach? Will he be able to find rhythm with Odell Beckham Jr.? Will they be able to keep Odell happy? Should they even worry about keeping Odell happy? The team that talent that team has is unmistakable. You have Myles Garrett back. You have Nick Chubb back, who's the second leading rusher in the NFL. Jarvis Landry had 1,000 yards receiving. Odell still had 1,000 yards receiving. You have an improved offensive line because you went out there in free agency and got help from who? From Tennessee's offensive line when you were able to sign their offensive lineman and Jack Conklin. You should be a better team. Your talent says that you're still one of the most talented teams in the AFC. I still put Cleveland at number 6. The only thing that separates Cleveland from everybody else and why you would take them off this list, and the only reason I think that they're there at number 6 is because of their history and because they had the golden opportunity last year and they completely let it go down their pants. Number five, I still have New England. You're still a team that's in transition. Cam is going from a situation where he had to help a team in transition to another team that's going in transition. You'll have young players. You're turning over that roster. You're handing it to a veteran QB. Make no mistake about it, this is a playoff team with Cam Newton healthy. This is a playoff team. Belichick, Newton, he's got the best coach available for him. They're not going to try to change his system. He's going to try to be healthy, but they're going to try to get the job done doing what Cam does best, using his feet, using his arm. His arm might not be as strong as it used to be, but a pretty damn strong arm. He should be just fine. They should be a playoff team, but I still have them at number five because of the changeover. Number four, this is a defense that is 5 years in the making, maybe even six. And this is why I love what they went for last year when they went after Minkah Fitzpatrick. If you're going to draft in the late teens anyway, you're only hoping for a player as good as who? Minkah Fitzpatrick? You would definitely draft a Minkah Fitzpatrick. I had no problem with them going after him last year. I didn't understand why people were upset about it. Well, they should tank it out for their next quarterback. No, remember, that's what losers do. And I just talked about the Browns. You have no faith in the Browns of what I'm talking about, do you? None. Why? That's a team that did tank it out for their quarterback number one overall. And they're still sitting there languishing with two number one overall picks, and you don't believe that they're talented enough to even make the playoffs this year. So really, what good is tanking? Pittsburgh proves it to you. Defense is there. They have the talent. You have the type of strong will that what comes with Mike Tomlin. Now, those are just words, because if Ben Roethlisberger can't return to some sort of a form, then all of a sudden Le'Veon Bell's right. Maybe he's not. All of a sudden Antonio Brown's right. Maybe it's not. Maybe the arguers for those guys are right. Because you've had talent. You said you wanted to be a better team. This is your opportunity. This is Ben Roethlisberger's opportunity to step in there and be the leader that he was supposed to be and he's been supposed to be over his entire career. He looks like he wants to take that leadership. This would be the biggest step for him. I scratched out New England at number four. I originally wanted to write them in there. I put Pittsburgh in there for that reason. I put New England at number five. At number three, I have Houston. I think that that's a powder keg because Bill O'Brien's the general manager. J.J. Watt's getting a little long in the tooth, but he's still the unequivocal leader of that franchise and really that entire city when it comes to sports. Deshaun Watson will eventually ascend to that position, I think. I love him as a quarterback. I think he's a dynamite leader, and I think he can be a dynamite leader. I think he's dealt with so much that Bill O'Brien has put on his plate in the early part of his career. I think that he has shown that there have been times where he's covered up for some of the inadequacies that Bill O'Brien has given him. And that's been part of the reason why Bill O'Brien feels perfectly confident in trading away DeAndre Hopkins. I have to put them there as one of those nice teams in the AFC. I put them number three. Number two, Baltimore. I think we're making a little bit too much of Lamar being 0-2 in the playoffs right now. He's still a young quarterback. There's still a lot he's learning. But it is a matzo ball out there. You get to this year, you make the playoffs, you lose again. That's 0-3. That's a storyline. I'm trying to give him a pass. You have an amazingly talented team. You lost Marshall Yanda this year to retirement. The offensive line is going to be a question, but that's why you have basically a cheat code in the backfield in Lamar Jackson. And you still have a nice running game. Number one, it goes without saying, it's Kansas City. And I think that when I look at these coaches, by the way, for these teams, Kansas City, Baltimore, Houston's a bit of an outlier, I'll grant you. Pittsburgh, New England, these coaches have all been to these places almost a decade each, over a decade each. If I were to really go there, I mean, Andy Reid's been a head coach in the NFL for over 20 years. That's where I add him in. You have long-standing older head coaches. The other ones that are on this list, they're a little bit younger, they're a little bit different, and different on head coaching lists because Vic Fangio's just become a head coach, but he's 60 years old. How are these guys going to be able to handle an offseason quite like this? Older coaches, guys who know what they're doing, guys who have systems in place, they're probably going to be better off than the other ones for this type of year. I think there's why no surprise where in a regular offseason, maybe I'd switch this around. In this offseason, going into this year, Kansas City, Baltimore, Houston, Pittsburgh, New England, there's your top five. Everybody else, we can argue it. 855-212-4227, we'll get to your guys' thoughts. And Sean Devaney coming up at 1140 a.m. It's Ken Carmen live on CBS Sports Radio. Sean Devaney joins us 1140 a.m. Eastern. I got to get to David in Virginia. I think that David's going to speak to my heart here. David, you're first up on CBS Sports Radio. Go ahead.
All right, listen, I think the beast in the AFC East is going to be Miami Dolphins, and I will tell you why. It's going to start, okay, really start and finish with our new coach, Brian Flores, and that man's not afraid of anybody. So when I was looking at the Miami Dolphins, you know, the Miami Dolphins spins up and all that stuff online, everybody's saying, oh, my goodness, they got Cam Newton in New England. Flores doesn't care. He's not going to be afraid of a single team of anybody. And his team is going to go into every single game thinking they're going to win. And if those guys don't play like they're supposed to, they're not going to have jobs anymore. He's going to hold them accountable. You got Devontae Parker. You've got Preston Williams. He comes back healthy. You've got a defense that might be a little bit suspect. You've got 2,000-yard former rushers in your backfield. Mm-hmm. So you can go and get mm-hmm. one of those two. But, again, I'm going to go back to the fact that Brian Flores will be coach of the year this year, and they will win the AFC East simply because he's not going to let anybody beat him. He's going to will that team to win.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call, David. David, if you heard that last segment, and I know you did because you were fired up, you know I have a great affinity for Brian Flores, and he was the guy. He was a guy who I had to use against every other head coach in the AFC, and if not the NFL. Like, if you had 5 wins with that team, at the time I saw them live, they had 21 guys who were UDFA. They had nobody on that roster in 2019 that played defense in 2018. Nobody who started. No one. They still had 5 wins. Now, they had that old hand as their quarterback. They should give Tua plenty of time, but that's the thing with this year. They're going to give Tua plenty of time. Tua might be the most talented, but he's certainly not going to be the most ready. So they're going to give Tua some time, and they should give Tua some time. Brian Flores has already proved. I call him Brian like I knew him. Brian Flores has already proved he's a great coach. The guy's got it. The will part of it, though, like there's going to be times where you don't have it yet. And the way that they won most of their games, they didn't do it when I saw them live, but watching them every single week on Game Pass, eliminated penalties, tried to play good sound football the best they could, tried to eliminate mistakes the best they could because he knew he didn't have the talent. They won 5 games. And you look up and down this list, you look up and down the NFL, and I see you and I go, what were you doing in Washington? Well, what is Matt Patricia doing in Detroit? And I'm sure the Lions fans are going, yeah, I'm nodding my head with it too. You know, what's going on? Where you guys get 3 wins, what's going on in Miami? They get 5. What is Freddie Kitchens doing in Cleveland? What would Brian Flores do if he had that football team? What would Brian Flores do if he had that type of talent? I think they're still a year away. I think with this offseason, Flores will be as prepared as any young coach out there. He'll be ready to go. I think they're a 5-7-win football team again. I think the Tua will play eventually this season. He'll get some seasoning. They're a middling football team still. I would still look towards 2021. But I think that with that guy, that's the type of guy that can make it work out. The whole tanking thing that I've argued against and I'll continue to argue against, it can work if you have the right power structure in place. Brian Flores looks like he's the right type of guy with that power. God, I hope I'm not saying things differently at the end of this football season. But I think he's the type of guy that can lead them to a different place of where they've been over nearly the last 20 years. And that's back to the playoffs consistently. And with that quarterback, he's a great kid, got a great head on his shoulders. Just obviously, and I'm just going to tell you the obvious, you always worry whether or not he's brittle. He comes from good stock. He had tough parents. He knows the situation to be tough. He played at Alabama. It's a tough program. He's a tough kid. He'll give you everything he can. It's just whether or not he's actually going to be able to take the field throughout most of his career. But I think those two, they got what it takes to be right up there with Buffalo. Right up there, we'll see what New England can do with Cam Newton. They got what it takes to be right up there for the future. It could be a tough division here in the future. We'll see what Darnold can do. I have a lot of faith and confidence in Brian Flores. I don't know if this year is the year that they take that leap. I think it's probably in 2021. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe David in Virginia will be calling me up, yelling at me later this year. 855-212-4CBA. At noon, we'll give you the top 5 and why Ohio State and Michigan is no longer the best rivalry in college football. Again, telling you more things you know, but I'm going to tell you why coming up at noon Eastern. Up next, Sean Devaney, NBA writer, heavy, as well as Forbes. We'll talk to him about the bubble. And about whether or not there's an asterisk around a certain somebody, especially if he wins the NBA Finals. We'll find that out with Sean Devaney coming up here in about just about 5 minutes. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. That's CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, and it's brought to you by GEICO, the fine folks at GEICO. Go to their website. Check them out as soon as you can. You're going to save a ton of money by going to the folks at GEICO. I tell you every week, I want to wait until the next time I got to do it in the next hour, but I might as well tell you now. Because my insurance agent puts the boots to me every chance he gets because he's a family friend, so he knows that I can't call him out on it because my wife won't let me. Don't make the same mistake I did. Get the GEICO. They're fabulous folks. Okay, unpaid testimonial. I mean, technically, I'm on the station, so it is a paid testimonial, but you get what I'm saying. They're fine folks out there. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. We're still efforting Sean Devaney. Hopefully we'll be able to get him here very, very soon. NBA writer for Heavy.com as well as Forbes. Also joining us at 12:40 p.m. Eastern, Howard Bolzer going to join us on the show. You know, when it comes to the whole name change thing, I'm going to get into this heavier coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. That's a promise to you. Because it was something that we led with today, and people immediately got in on it. I know it's a touchy subject to a lot of folks out there. To you as a fan, there's a very small minority of people who I am talking to who have hate in their heart for other races, who are bad people, who believe that just because of the color of their skin that they were born, that they were better than other people. I'm not talking to them, and we had a great call from Greg in Michigan earlier today. It's not about changing their perspective. That's not what this is about. It's about, do you profit from something that, not as offensive, but something that's bothersome to an entire race of people's core? If you can say yes to that, then maybe you should consider a change. And it's okay to look at things and go, we're not infallible people. I can look back 40 years ago and say, it wasn't, at least on my radar, it wasn't a big deal then. But it was probably a big deal to a lot of people that I never got in contact with 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, when the Redskins first came into fruition. Like I can say, well, yeah, it wasn't a big deal because I didn't know. Because we watched the network news at night. I saw Tom Brokaw. You saw Walter Cronkite. You turned the news off, and then that was it. You read the newspaper. That was it. You didn't see social media. Like, there is a thing where I look at the internet and I say, oh, the internet's fake. Well, some of it can be real and some of it can affect some change. And I do think that what a lot of people say on the internet, they're doing it for their own personal validation, whether it be retweets or likes or popularity, whatever it is, something they didn't get in high school, I have no idea. A lot of that is true. But there are a lot of people who are saying, no, what this is offends me and hurts me and hurts people like me because you're making money off of something that's very ugly to me. So, am I offended by it personally? No, I'm not offended by it. But I can understand where other people would be. I can understand where an entire race of people would be. And if there's enough of those people and they contact the right people, this is the part of it. If there's enough of those folks who are outraged and they contact the right people over being outraged, they're going to get what they want. I said to you in the beginning of the show, if you go and get a sign and you say how bad the Redskins are and you stand outside of their personal headquarters, 855-212-4CBS, we'll see if we get to Sean. We'll let you guys in on this right now. If I go get a sign and I stand outside the Redskins headquarters and I get a whole bunch of people, these are titans of industry. Dan Snyder has made a lot of money moving money around. It's a weird history there. He is not bothered by that. Owners of professional sports franchises made their money stepping on throats in their own personal businesses. They are not bothered by you standing outside with a sign. They're used to it. They're used to you doing it for their other businesses that they've done it. When you contact corporate partners like Nike and FedEx, and they say, hey, we're uncomfortable with this, and our name's up on the stadium, and we also supply your merchandise, then you're going to get something there. Then you're going to get some change. So I know it's a touchy subject because for a lot of football fans, hey, you're a Redskins fan. Hey, I'm a big Redskins fan. I'm not a racist. That's the way a lot of people are going to look at it. Okay. Are you not going to be a fan of that team if they change their name? If you woke up tomorrow and they were the Washington Red Tails? I don't think you would. And I think they know that, and I think deep down you know that. And so we make a big deal over it We don't like change. We're afraid of change. Ultimately, is this change going to hurt as much as we think it will? I don't think it will. And that's not just with the Washington Redskins, who are not my personal favorite football team. That would be the same with the Atlanta Braves and even the Kansas City Chiefs if it had to come down to it. Or if it came down to the Cleveland Indians, who are my favorite baseball team. Because I would rather see baseball in Cleveland in 5 years than get all upset about a name being changed. 855-212-4CBS. We'll get back to that coming up in a little bit. Right now, let's go to the hotline. We welcome in Sean Devaney. He joins us on the show right now. NBA writer, Heavy.com and Forbes.com. Follow this man on Twitter, at Sean Devaney. He's also a hell of an author as well. Sean, thanks for joining us this morning, bud.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Sean, first off, a lot of players, you know, there's some players in and out on the bubble. But there's players saying, hey, you know what, I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm going to go anyway. I like to make some money. It kind of feels to me like a lot of players, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm reading it wrong, and this is why I want you here. Is it where a lot of players are kind of looking at this the same way a lot of people are going to work now, where it's like, hey, you know what, I'm a little bit nervous, but I got to make some ends meet, and I want the rest of my salary, and I also want some of that pool that might be coming into the postseason as well?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a big part of it. You know, the thing with the NBA and the way that the salary structure is set up, the way that the collective bargaining is set up, is that it's a bit unique. You know, it's different than baseball and the battle we saw in baseball, because in baseball, you know, the owners bring in all the money that they collect, and then they determine how much they give to the players. Whereas in basketball, every dollar that comes in is split 50-50. Like, there's no negotiation there. That's in the contract. It's split 50-50. So as much motivation as owners have to get guys back on the field, on the court in this case, that's the players have every bit as much motivation. So that's the big thing, is that players are looking at this and saying, you know, if we don't do this and we lose all this revenue, that's money that players across the board are going to lose, and a lot of guys just don't want to just don't want to look at it that way.
There's an also different thought of it, and I think that this is just basic dollars and cents that now needs to come out, where you've seen a couple of players who are unrestricted free agents, and they've had to make some tough decisions as well, Sean, knowing that, hey, my team probably doesn't have a shot. I'm going to sit this thing out and wait until free agency and get my money and start coming up on Christmas here in the 2020-2021 season.
If you're Bradley Beal, for instance, right? I mean, no, or Victor Oladipo, who's coming off of a ruptured quadricep tendon. You know, if you're any of these free agents who are coming into this thing, you are going to be at greater risk for injury. Just the way that this is being brought back, and the speed with which you're going to have to ramp up and start playing games, that naturally puts you at more risk for injury, and you don't want to go into your free agent year, you know, with a blown out ACL. You just don't. And so, for a lot of guys, as much as in the big picture for the players, this is a matter of rescuing revenue and keeping their salaries where they've been or as close to where they've been as they can. If you're one of the individuals who has to actually go into the free agent market in either this off season, which won't be the summer as we're used to, or next summer in 2021, where there's a ton of NBA free agents, it's a really tough decision. You know, Bradley Beal has a really tough decision, you know, because he's been such a leader for that Washington team. At the same time, he's going to be a free agent in less than a year, and he's going to be at a higher risk to do something, you know, to one of his, you know, major suffer a major injury. You know, whether it's his knee or his Achilles tendons or something like that. You know, do you do that? Is it worth it to go and play eight games for the Wizards and then close out the season? That's a really tough decision.
Would he, in his situation, would it help? Or would it even hurt? Would that matter at all if you play at going and getting ready to be an unrestricted free agent? Because I just assume it's like, hey, if you were going to sign Bradley Beal to a great big deal or something like that, I think I would look at it probably as a GM and go, you know what? That's their problem. That's not mine. Here's the money. We need the player.
Yeah. No. And that's a good point to be made as well. That, you know, Kevin Durant is coming off of you know, as serious an injury as you can have as a basketball player at 31 years old in an Achilles tendon tear, and yet he still got a max contract from the Nets. So, you know, there is certainly this level of concern on the part of players, but I think a lot of teams are saying, hey, wait, we still paid you guys anyways. You know, it's not like Kevin Durant didn't get the money, or Klay Thompson. You know, I think of Klay Thompson. You know, he tore his ACL, and the Warriors still gave him a 5-year max extension, and he would have gotten that from any other team if he had truly tested free agency. So, yeah, I think from the owner's perspective, they're saying, hey, look, even though you've been injured in the past, we still paid you guys. So, you know, there is sort of that counter argument as well.
How does Gordon Hayward work this situation through? And is there any comparison I can make at all to Mike Trout, or are they just different because one would be in a bubble and the other one isn't?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different. And certainly the fact that, you know, Hayward has gone through this season and it's been a little bit of a rescue season for him, because he had a rough couple of years in Boston, his first couple of years. And he is potentially a free agent. You know, he's got a player option worth $35 million. My sense is that he'll opt in and take that $35 million and then test free agency next year. But you know, he's got a lot at stake in terms of how things play out and how he plays down the stretch here. But at the same time, he's going to be taking, you know, at least a week off, probably a little more than that, when you get into what the quarantine's going to be and how much time he's going to want to spend with his wife to see the birth of his child in September. So, you know, it's a tricky situation for him. You know, NBA teams always welcome when a highly paid player works out so that the birth of his child is in September. So you can't really blame him for that. But at the same time, you know, the Celtics are going to be in the midst of a potential run to the finals. I mean, if anybody's going to challenge Milwaukee in the East, it's probably the Celtics. And he's just gonna go away in the middle of September. So that's going to be really tough, I think, both on him and on the team.
Should I just get to the point and ask, is there an asterisk next to the Lakers and LeBron if they win the championship in comparison to anybody else?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's going to be an asterisk no matter what. This is completely unusual. I mean, there's nothing here that's going to be usual. If you're one of the favorites and you get through this and you wind up winning a championship, whether you're Milwaukee, the Lakers, the Clippers, you're going to have an asterisk. If you're one of the underdogs, you're going to have an even bigger asterisk, because people are going to say, well, this is like the NCAA tournament or something, and a number 8 seed just got hot and winds up winning it. So yeah, you know, it's you're going to see an asterisk, I think, no matter what. I think there's given the situation, it's impossible to say that people will view this as a normal NBA season, as a normal NBA championship. But at the same time, they're going to get a trophy. They're going to get a ring. I'm sure that if you're the players, you're not going to look at it that way.
Will they go back to an usual, like, Halloween night start or something like that in the 2021 season? Or do you think that this Christmas Day thing or around Christmas time, December thing could be permanent?
It's something that a lot of owners have wanted to make permanent, you know, sort of. We can either go again. So if you're going to play for, you know, 5 months of the year, do you want those 5 months? Do you want the first 2 months of those 5 months to go up against the NFL, or would you rather go up against Major League Baseball, which is obviously flagging? And a lot of owners have said, hey, let's go against baseball. Let's push back the start of the season, and push back the finals into July. And you know, certainly there's been a move for that from owners, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that move continue after this year. Of course, the league right now is just so focused on trying to get this year done, and they're not really addressing any of that stuff. I wouldn't be surprised, though. There's definitely a move on within the league to push back the start and to have it start, you know, sometime after Thanksgiving. And that way you're taking on baseball a lot more often than you are taking on the NFL.
That's Sean Devaney. Follow him on Twitter, at Sean Devaney. That's with all E's and no A's. Sean, thank you very much for the time, buddy. All the best.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sean Devaney joining us on the hotline, NBA writer for Heavy.com as well as Forbes. Yeah, that's one of the big things that are going on in the future. I would say it's my job to follow the NBA, and I love the NBA. Contrary to what some people out there like, I love the NBA. I don't usually start watching it. I'll watch opening night, But because we're so heavily involved in football, especially you're looking at that time, college football starting to shape up, usually. I mean, this is a different year, obviously. But if you look at most years, college football is starting to shape up about conference championship games. What's going to make those? We're starting to see the first runs of the postseason. Then the NFL is starting to take shape. You watch opening night, I watch opening night, and then I'm probably gone until about Christmas. And if it's my job, I imagine there's a lot of people maybe the same way, unless they are just full-on basketball junkies. 855-212-4CBS. Coming up next, speaking of college football, while Ohio State and Michigan is no longer the best rivalry in college football, one of their own players told you why.